WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is certainly a positive development around here as we keep calm and stay local. Nothing more local than one thing that's very, very near and dear to the heart of Don Moeller. Don, a former Baltimore County executive, but more importantly, Don Moeller of Catonsville and Nestor Aparicio of Dundalk. What do Dundalk and Catonsville have in common, Don Moeller? What's one thing for sure, other than good pizza and great people and all that, right? But we share one thing in common that I know that's very near and dear to your heart, and also my diploma wall.
Well, they share one of their campuses for one of the major community colleges in the entire nation, and we have the champion for that community college. No bigger champion for community college in general, but certainly the Community College of Baltimore County than its president, my good friend Dr. Sandra Curtinitis, and we're delighted to welcome Dr. Curtinitis to Baltimore Positive. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm challenged as never before, and I'm delighted to have a chance to talk with you.
Well, I think we're all challenged like we've never been before, right? Like that is part of this, that no matter how old, how young, what we've been through, where we've been, this is a new one. This is a little bit of a curveball. And I know from the education space, and Don and I have been talking to so many educators this week, we've been talking about learning remotely for years and teaching remotely for years and how to do it and who's good at it and how we could be better at it. Well, here we are. It's now become a necessity and we're all adapting to how's my hair look today on Zoom, right?
Yes.
Doctor, for you, first thoughts at the beginning of this, when this happened and where your students are. We've sort of began with the crisis management part of anyone at the C level for any of this over the last 6 weeks and how to navigate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this first, and that is that I think a crisis of this nature is a real litmus test for leadership. It's very, very different, and it's very, very hard. And the trick is to be able to lead people through this kind of experience when your own face is ashen and your spirits, you know, depressed. So what happened at the Community College of Baltimore County happened right in the middle of March. We were fully up and running as the campuses were bustling. We had probably about 10,000 students in our credit programs, about 8,000 students enrolled in our non-credit programs. And within a two-week time period, actually almost overnight on March 16th, we became a ghost town. So what we knew we had to do was to cancel the trainings, the courses that were dependent upon people being right in the sphere of instruction, whether that was a surgical technology program or some kind of a program where you really needed to have on-site instruction. But we actually, in a two-week period from March 16 to March 30, our faculty and staff converted about 3,000 sections, regular course sections, into remote delivery. And I use remote rather than online, because there are ways other than delivering instruction online that faculty actually can and did teach. I mean, not everybody is a qualified online faculty member. Not everybody's gone through the quality training that is required to do coursework. So it was a combination of things, a combination of using turning regular syllabus into some variant, some of it online, some of it on the phone, some of it through materials that were sent and so forth. And what we actually did was we had a spring break scheduled for April 6th. And we actually shut down classes for a week because we knew we could make up the time at the end of the semester in the final exam week. And then we moved our spring break so that faculty and staff like advisors and tutors, I mean, all these folks had to figure out how they were going to deliver their services and instruction remotely. And so we had those 2 weeks where we went dark, and on March 30, we actually opened up again with 3,000 sections being taught remotely. And basically on the six sites that are our campus and extension center locations, probably, and even right now, we have only about 50 people in the essential worker category. And you can imagine who these people must be. They're the facilities people. They're the grounds people. They're people like me. I come to my office every day about 8, and I go home about 8 at night. And each day, one of my assistants, they take turns because this is hard work, trying to do everything remotely through Teams meetings, trying to write emails that, have just the right wording in them. So, you know, we've been at this, and we're going to be at it till the end of the semester. We've made the decision not to even try to guess whether the governor will be able to allow us to come back together by mid-month. We're just remote through the end of the semester doing virtual... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't want to.
Oh, I was just going to add doing a virtual commencement, doing a virtual student awards. In other words, May for us is astoundingly full of wonderful celebratory events in any other year. This year, we will not be able to do the pinnings. We will not be able to do the athletic banquets. We will not be able to do the many things that we do. A special picnic for graduates and so forth. So it's got a sad feeling to it, but we know this is what we must do.
Well, that feeling, and you just gave in 2 minutes, I think, a synopsis of what folks are grappling with all across this country on so many levels. And you talked about the leadership challenge. Walk us through a little bit about how that played out at CCBC, because as you indicated, there are people at all different stages of their comfort level of delivering instruction in a different manner, and it's the kind of thing that typically would take a period of time, as you indicated, with professional development and other approaches. This was like you go to bed one night, we wake up the next day, and you have to say to your professional staff, guys, we've got to do this differently. Talk about how that worked, how it played out, how your staff reacted to the challenge.
Well, that's a good question, and I appreciate your asking it, because I couldn't be prouder of the way our people have responded to this. Now, remember, if you are converting 3,000 sections into remote delivery, that means, you know, we've got about 4,000 people who work for us, and many of them do jobs that are connected to instruction, and some of them do not. And we made a commitment right at the beginning, before we knew if we could have any option for stimulus funding from the federal government. We actually made a commitment that we would keep every single person on the payroll till June 30. I mean, this would be our normal way of proceeding through a semester. But we actually then said that everybody who could work, even if it was work quite different from what they would do if they were coming to the campuses, that everybody would be assigned some kind of remote duty. So we have folks who are working now, reaching out to students, calling them. In fact, one of my own assistants converted to, I just sort of said, Caroline Scott, the dean, take her, and she will be wonderful, calling students, see how they're doing, reaching out to them to see what their needs are and so forth. And so we've been able to actually keep almost everyone connected either on campus or remotely to some function that's important to the Community College of Baltimore County and its delivery of service and instruction to the students. So for the faculty, it was, as I said, 2 weeks of kind of waving a wand and turning them into instructional, into doing instruction in a very different way. But they're professionals. They're experienced. They know what the content is that they have to get across. And they've been supported in every way we possibly could support them through our online team or through our advising team that could help reach out to students. And each of the deans has had to kind of figure out how they preside over and gain the best advantage from the team that serves and supports them. And Don, you know that we have a very lean executive structure. It is me and 5 vice presidents. And so we sort of used a kitchen cabinet approach to presiding over all of this because it's virtually impossible to get, it was virtually impossible, we figured out how we're going to do this, it was virtually impossible to think that you could get 1,000 or 2,000 people, you know, on a telephone call and talk about what to do. So what I've tried to do, and really, as we first rolled this out, the vice presidents and I were on a 2-hour, how's it going call almost every single day. And then they, working with their teams, with their leadership teams, the deans, the directors, doing the same thing. And then all the way down through department chairs and program coordinators and assistant directors and so forth. When you're as big as we are, you know, it's hard if you're a small college to do what we had to do. It is a real challenge when, in essence, you got, you know, just under 60,000 students in a given year. And you've got 4,000 people full and part-time that you need to actually make sure each is doing as much as he or she can to keep things going. Because the two things that drive us always when it comes all the way down to the very bottom of what we do here, the first is we are absolutely mission-centric. We know what we have to do to help students be successful. And the second is we need to support the people that we depend upon to deliver the mission, the instruction, and the support for students. And we pushed everything else aside. All the other topics we thought we were going to be focusing on during the spring, expanding this and doing that and increasing training, you know, all of those things have been pushed into the background because the single most important thing is to help us get from March 16 to May 17 and support as many students instructionally in the classroom, so to speak, and out of the classroom as we can.
Well, Sandra, at what point, and I see, you know, Nestor's head just sort of spinning, if we were together and buying you a cheeseburger as we would like to do when we're doing Baltimore Positive, his head is spinning and we would be with one another. But when you talk about this, at what point do you start to get into a couple of other things? And I think those other things are, what does this mean in terms of future instruction, both at the community college level and at the college level and at the postdoctorate level, all higher ed. What does it mean for that potentially? And I see where just recently the chancellor, Dr. Perriman, has put together a group to begin to come up with some guidelines for reopening in the fall and what that may look like. When do you, as community college president of, is it still the largest community college in the state of Maryland? We used to brag that it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Headcount-wise, we are. Yeah.
Headcount-wise. Well, we're going to stick with that. You know, my friend Kevin Kamenitz and your friend, which it was number one. It was one of his proudest things to tell everybody. That's the largest community college in the entire
state. Well, I'm going to give the elevator speech later, so we'll get that at the end.
Okay.
Yes.
As the president of the largest community college in the state of Maryland, when do you start having discussions about what you will need to make a decision about the fall?
Well, we're already beginning to talk about that. I mean, we prepare a fall schedule early in the spring semester. Customarily, our fall schedule goes online for people to start registering on May 4. But here's the way I'm looking at this, and the way we're trying to be thoughtful, not to make cataclysmic decisions based on today that will affect us and our students 3, 4, 5 months from now. So we built a summer session that's largely online. We've recently added, I mean, I'm just so heartened by the governor's leadership approach, but also by his comments last week about his recovery plan. So we have a summer schedule all lined up that's largely online, and we added a session that starts on June 22nd that, if all is well, we will offer on-site. And those are science classes with labs. Those are automotive classes where students need to be able to take engines apart, that kind of coursework. And so as we've looked at the fall, what I've really asked the Vice President of Instruction to do is to make sure we have a good blend of online and in-seat offerings, and that over the summer we will offer professional development opportunities to faculty to help them be ready, if necessary, to morph everything back to online. But I think we're going to be so much better prepared in the fall. I'm not ready to say we're going to become an online institution. Given the students we serve, you know, we discovered that 1/3 of our students didn't have the technology to go online.
That's a huge number.
Dr. Nestor and I both talked. Say that again to folks who are listening. And again, if you are listening, we're with Dr. Sandra Curtinitis, president of Community College of Baltimore County, the largest community college in the state of Maryland. Share that information again, Dr. Curtinitis, with folks who are listening, because I think it'll blow them away.
Well, thank you. I will. We are not by accreditation or by mission an online college. We have a very strong and robust online component, but when we had to put everything into remote format this semester, we discovered that equally 1/3 of our students lack the technology. They don't have a computer. They don't have the internet. They don't have the experience with online. They've actually signed up at the Community College of Baltimore County because we are so much of a, you know, just a personal hand-holding, sit down in front of me, let's talk this through kind of environment.
Well, it's also not Harvard where everybody has the latest technology. I mean, I sat in your classrooms. I'm a graduate, and, you know, I back in the 1980s, I would put my head around who may or may not 30 years later have technology. But doctor, I would say more than anything, community college was always the place where if you couldn't afford to go away for college, this was an affordable place where everybody there was sort of counting pennies and happy that the books were a little cheaper and that it was closer and that didn't use gas and I didn't have to fight the park at Towson or the other places that I considered to driving, you know? And so I would say that when people have lost their jobs and they've lost the first thing that would be, do I have Wi-Fi in my house? You know, we hear that as a school children problem in Baltimore County and the city, and we've
that's
had
right.
both of the superintendents on. That's a 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old young person's problem. That's a problem across all sectors, right? That not everyone has all of this stuff that some of us are very privileged to have, right?
Yes, and not everyone can learn remotely. And one of the strengths of a community college is we have many learning modalities, and we make them available. But I will just add to what you've just said this way. I think we know that 45% of our students depend upon financial aid to come here. That means 45% of our students are in the lowest economically challenged category. They come here for a new life. They come here to learn a trade, an occupation, a transfer. They come here with expectations. And if we ice them out by saying, sorry, everything we're doing is online. Now, you know what? If the governor says the state shuts down, the state shuts down, and we do the best we can. But I do not wish to plan for the fall to have everything online, because I know that's going to ice out a certain population, a huge population of our students. They need to come. They don't have a car. They take two buses to get to school. They don't live in environments necessarily that are conducive to home study. I know the K through 12 folks are dealing with this big time, but I've got my eye on a state that's better prepared in the fall if the virus resurfaces. And we're very practiced now. We all have masks. We know social distancing. We bump elbows or we just kind of wave. So I feel it would be wrong for us to presume what the future will be 3 or 4 months from now. But I also know we have to be prepared should that future become the reality that some believe it will. Honestly, I actually do not think the economy could stand a second shock wave like the one we've experienced. And we have to be careful as we plan. We have to be careful that we leave open the possibility for all people to come here, and not just those, not just the doctor's son who can't go back to Ohio State or someplace. Anyway.
Well, and I guess the other part of that would be from you know, your perspective, these people that are already financially challenged, that they're coming there to get a job, to get a life, to get a vocation like I did 30 years ago. But then where's the job waiting for them on the other side of that? And I you know, and Don, I'll let you back into the conversation at this point, because we've had at it pretty good, and Dr. Curtinitis.
Well, I want Dr. Curtinitis, and being very gracious with her time, very, very busy, I want her to talk a little bit, and that's what you call it, the elevator speech. I want her to talk a little bit about the kinds of things that CCBC does to address that point you were just talking about, Nestor. What we used to call it all the time, and the doctor knows this, that the community college is one of the key economic engines for the entire region. When we would go out and try to recruit businesses in Baltimore County, or when the governor goes out and tries to get businesses to come to the state, one of the things we always promoted was that we had an incredible workforce development agency ready to go full bore that had its grant roots really in the Community College of Baltimore County. And Dr. Curtinitis, maybe you just educate our listeners a little bit about the kinds of preparation that you do for folks and how much a key part you are of this state's economy.
Yeah, thank you. I was just on up in Towson doing a press conference with the county executive about some new training that we will be providing. It's called contact trace training, and it's the development of professionals who actually work within a coronavirus kind of environment to identify the people who have had contact with patients who are ill. It's actually not a very well-known profession, but, you know, they actually are able. There's a way to do this to help the safety of the community by training these folks to be able to identify where the virus may be going next or may have been. And so we're doing the training for that. Now, nobody even knows what this profession is, but I tell you what, our people have worked overtime to actually create the training to do that. And I mention that because this college is an anchor institution in this county, in this region, and in this state. And everything, you've heard me say this many times, Don, everything we do here is workforce development. Whether we're educating dancers and musicians and poets, or welders and nurses and contact tracing professionals. You know, the strength of this institution, there are over 100 degree options, and there are several hundred, 200-300 workforce development training programs that we offer here on a regular basis. And as I concluded my comments at the press conference, I basically said what we were saying just a few minutes ago. When the economy reopens, people can go back to work, but there are going to be a lot of people who have no jobs to return to. And my message to them is, come see us. We can
because
help.
You have family supporting. I say to people all the time when I'm out and about is that you have programs that actually have vacancies that when one completes that program, they're the kinds of jobs that are $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, family-supporting programs that you can get first-rate training at the Community College of Baltimore County.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have over 1,200 nursing and allied healthcare students in our institution in any given year. And I'll tell you what, nurses leave us, they walk into $50,000 a year jobs. Aviation students get their FAA certification and walk into $80,000 a year jobs. I mean, these are programs that require 2 years of work to get an associate's degree. And then the other neat thing is, and you've been talking to lots of education partners, they are our partners. So we've got transfer relationships with all of the universities in our region, in our state. And honestly, if a student finishes an associate's degree at the Community College of Baltimore County or any of the state's community colleges through the Maryland Transfer Compact, they are offered junior status at any of the state's universities, and they take their associate's degree, 60 credits, right into their bachelor's work. And because we keep track of all of this, we know that our graduates will do as well or better than native students who have entered as freshmen.
Well, Doug, there's no doubt about it, and we're going to have you back, obviously, Sandra, for a much broader discussion because there's so much. We really are just scratching the surface. I would say, and Nestor, I don't know if we've talked about this, but one of the examples is Nestor knows I have a granddaughter who's a senior in high school heading off to Roanoke College, hopefully in the fall. They have a fall semester. But this year, as a senior at Catonsville High School, she went across the street and took several college classes. So she's going to have, 6 or 9 credits,
yep,
on her resume as she enters Roanoke. And I'm not going to let you get out of here. First of all, Nestor, you probably aren't aware of this, but several years ago, my good friend, Dr. Curtinitis, came in to the county office building, and basically she refused to leave until we committed to something called the College Promise Program.
Yeah.
She's laughing because she knows it was true.
I know.
I'm not leaving your office until you say yes. And she was ahead of the curve, and she was right, and I'm proud
of
her.
You're softy on education. We know that. Anything we bring you for education, you're all in on,
Nestor, as to what the College Promise Program is, Dr. Curtinitis, and why you're so proud of it.
Well, College Promise Program is a full scholarship, all tuition and fees paid, to attend full-time CCBC for 2 years, and it is available to students who have a 2.5 or better GPA and who actually commit not only to attending full-time, but who commit towards earning an associate's degree before they transfer to someplace else.
This would have been me. I would have just, maybe 2.51. I have to get over the line.
You would have qualified.
Yes, but the other thing about it is this, that actually, and Don, this has morphed since our initial creation of this, that this scholarship is for families who make too much money to be Pell Grant eligible, but make too little money to be able to send their sons and daughters to the community college.
And there's a lot more of that than we think, right? That fall in that category.
Yep. It's a family income of $150,000 now, Don. We did really good work when we established this.
Well, and it was, as I said, it was so far ahead of its time. So we thank you for that. We thank you for Jamie Alvarez as well, your chair of the engineering department. We had Jamie on. I would encourage folks to jump into the Baltimore Positive. Go look at Jamie Alvarez's episode. He talks about the great work that CCBC did with business partners to provide mask and TPP equipment using your Fab Lab. Just amazing stuff, Dr. Peritonitis.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, we spent a half an hour together, and I haven't even bragged on my Dundalk Community College roots and, you know, talking about going back there and being a part of it and getting an AA and going to UB. Moeller set me up with this, Dr. K. He told me in 1982 I was going to be the Chris Thomas of Baltimore sports journalism, and here we are, you know, 38 years later, and look how it turned out. But he's also got Kurt Schmoe coming on, so I've got both of the, you know, community college where I went as well as UB on today.
That's
trying to
great.
Still educate. This is continuing education. I should check that little box off there. You
know? Bet.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I hope you will, once we're freed from this and we sit down at one of our sponsors, that you'll come out and we'll do a full episode and really do a deep dive into the Community College of Baltimore County, because it's so personal for so many people. As Nestor said, he graduated from there. I'm proud to say that my daughter is a proud graduate from there, someone who went on from the Community College of Baltimore County to Towson, to the University of Maryland to get a doctorate, now is an elementary school principal. So there are so many success stories related to the Community College of Baltimore County. Can you believe that you've been there now? What are we talking about, 15 years
15.
Now?
15, yep.
Does it seem like yesterday?
It does, but this is my 25th year as a community college president.
Just amazing.
I'm glad I didn't have to face this challenge.
Well, we're gonna get in a Beltway fist fight about whether Don's gonna take us over to State Fair in Catonsville or whether I'm gonna bring you over to Dundalk, maybe over to Costas before it's all over. Maybe we meet halfway down in Fadley's, but that wouldn't be very Baltimore County of us, but it would be a very Baltimore positive. We appreciate the visit, Dr. K. You can follow Dr. Sandra Curtinitis at Dr. K_CCBC out on Twitter, as well as the Community College of Baltimore, virtually for a little while. Hopefully campusy once we get the fall semester going. Doc, appreciate the time.
You bet. Thank you both.
Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive, joining us here. We are Baltimore Positive. We're always up at WNST.net, AM 1570. The buy at Toyota.com audio vault for some sports stuff as well as some museum stuff, lots of education stuff. Next week, the mayor candidates come back in as we now inch up closer on this June 2nd date and mail-in voting and all of that stuff as well. Find me anytime, anywhere. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. We're keeping calm. We're staying local. We're supporting our sponsors at State Fair and Fadley's and Moeller and Gary and doing it right. Waiting for the end of COVID-19 so we can all go out. Stay Baltimore positive, everyone.